Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
And good morning. We're back for the second hour of our inaugural broadcast. Very excited to be with you. Thank you so much for joining me. Also, Connor here in the Waukesha studios of WMK Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. It's the Shaw in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Also broadcasting throughout the state, other places in the Midwest. And Mike Crute, who most thoughtfully invited me, kindly, generously invited me to take this spot on Saturday morning, tells me that this broadcast will also be rebroadcast on Sunday mornings for those who are not joining us on a regular basis on Saturday morning. But this morning we are live. We're live in downtown Waukesha. Connor joining me here in the studio for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Every single Saturday, we're going to spend more time delving a little bit more deeply into some of the issues that Mike and Dom and others and I will chat about during the week as those news stories percolate up for your attention and your focus. And today in this inaugural program, we're talking about one of the most serious challenges facing America in the 21st century, and that is firearms, and in particular, the onslaught, the devastation, the disaster, the crisis that is our firearms use and abuse, taking the lives of quite literally great significant numbers of our population. Right before the break and for much of the second portion of the first hour, I was talking with you about what the Second Amendment means historically, that up until 2008, the United States Supreme Court had not specifically said that there was an independent individual right to gun ownership, but that changed in 2008 when, in fact, Heller became the law of the land, and Antonin Scalia told us not only about the right of individual ownership in the home and use, but also the notion that you can, in fact, impose reasonable regulations and conditions on everything from the manufacture, the sale, the transfer, the use of weapons. That's also a part of the Second Amendment under this case called Heller. In this second hour this morning, as we continue this discussion on an otherwise beautiful Saturday morning of this very somber and very grave discussion of guns in America, we're going to chat about what the Supreme Court's going to be doing, frankly, perhaps this month, probably no later than the next 4 to 5 weeks, in a second case called Bruen, B-R-U-E-N. We're going to chat about where that case comes from in the 14-year wake of Heller, what the issue is there, specifically focusing on whether there is a constitutional right to use and carry firearms beyond the home, on the streets of America, the sidewalks of Waukesha, other places throughout the United States of America, what that means, what is the dimension of that, and what kinds of conditions can be imposed even on that right, if indeed, as we suspect it will, the Supreme Court finds that there is such a constitutional right to own and use firearms beyond the home. We are going to be taking callers this hour and, frankly, every Saturday morning as we discuss some of these issues in greater detail. That number is 844-967-2789. We're thrilled to get your comments. Delighted to have your questions as they come in. And before I get back to Bruen and the legacy of Heller and what we will likely anticipate from the Supreme Court, let's take the first of our callers. Mike is in Sheboygan. Mike, we're glad to have you with us this morning. What's your thought or comment or question today on Morning Cannolis? And Mike, are you there? I think... All right, Mike, you're there. Very good. Glad to have you with us. And Mike, are you with us? I thought I heard you there for just a moment or so.
I am here. I can hear you.
Okay, great. What's your question? I'm glad to have you with us.
Thank you. Congratulations on the new show. Really
Thanks
appreciate
so much.
Your service to our sanity.
Right.
And I guess Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Mike. Glad to have you with
okay.
us.
Okay, and I really appreciate this the same discussion that you always provide us, but this is a great opportunity for you to get into the weeds. As a former Army officer and a former believer, from my vantage point, it seems that the flag, patriotism, and faith has been commandeered. In that light, knowing what the Constitution says and what the Bill of Rights and Second Amendment written later said, and I believe if I understand your vita, you studied under Antonin Scalia, is that true?
That is correct. I don't want to say that I was at the top of my class in the University of Chicago. I wasn't one of his clerks, but he was one of my professors, administrative law, and certainly knew him and got to know him a little bit. This is before, again, this dates me tremendously, but dates me because Antonin Scalia was about to be plucked up by Ronald Reagan, be placed on the Court of Appeals, and then went on to the Supreme Court after that. So yes, a long time ago, but did know him as a professor.
Well, nevertheless, with your undergrad degrees from Marquette in English and history, you were a human being before you were a lawyer. So
that's
my
correct.
Question is, and I know you don't like to speculate, but that your comments this morning on what Antonin Scalia said about Heller, it appears to me that if he were alive today, he could not possibly have gone along with this bastardization or using of the Second Amendment as the blunt cudgel that is being applied to it. And at the very least, and this will be the vernacular, he must be rolling in his grave, seeing as how it's been taken over and basically used as a blunt weapon. I know you don't want to speculate, but I'm going to ask you to do so anyways, because I bet I'm not the only one asking this question.
Absolutely, Mike. And it's perfectly okay to speculate, right? Because that's what our talk radio is all about. I so appreciate your question, your comment, and your calling in this morning. Because to underscore that point, yes. You know, the language that I read from Heller, some of it's in a footnote or two, but most of it's key to the opinion. And so this is Antonin Scalia, again, this icon sometimes of conservative politics out there, but certainly a jurist, someone who was articulating on a regular basis a very conservative view not that long ago, just 14 years ago, certainly in my lifetime, I suspect yours as well, Mike, saying that, yes, you've got this right. And it is joined with the same obligation, the right, the prerogative of government to impose conditions on that. And so when our present president says, as he did just a couple of days ago, that this right is not unconstitutional, he's not making that up. That's the law of the United States of America. And again, I would encourage, Mike, I know you do it and others do it, to listen religiously to this station, others. Take a look at what Scalia said in Heller. Read that language when he talks about all these kinds of things that governments can, in fact, and will do, should do to keep us safe and secure. That is as much of the law. And yes, I will speculate to say that, gosh, Scalia, if nothing more, was a man of precedent. And I would like to think, along with you, that today, if he was around to see the misinterpretation of what he wrote and the alignment of the Second Amendment almost exclusively with this notion that it's gun ownership and that's it, he would balk at that. And yes, maybe he is rolling in his grave, as you said, Mike, but he would certainly look back to Heller and say, that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. I gave you this right to own guns in your home, but also the obligation and the prerogative of the government, local, state, and federal, to keep us safe and secure, and to do that by imposing regulations legislatively that are out there, and we'll chat more about those. So very much appreciate your comment, Mike, and could not agree with you more. Appreciate the opportunity to speculate and to go down that road. Thanks so much, Mike, for calling in. We've got another caller who's also calling in. We'll take that question as well, and then we'll get back to what the Supreme Court's going to be doing. Mark, you've been on the line for a little while. Thank you for calling in. Appreciate your comments and questions this morning as well.
Well, not a problem. I haven't been on the line that long. Yeah, it's interesting how our judiciary and our lawmakers fail to, you know, that they complain about, that's not enumerated in the Constitution. Madison made it pretty clear that they didn't enumerate everything in the Constitution that they might be called upon to do to promote the general welfare, and that it's interesting that some of our, you know, court judge, you know, the, what the irony to me is in the recent thing coming out from Alito is that he says, well, it's not enumerated in the Constitution. Well, neither is the power of the Supreme Court to decide the constitutionality of laws. I mean, it's not enumerated in the Constitution. Of course, we've had this discussion before. That's whole Madison versus Marbury, and that, you know, where they assume that power for themselves, that you know, that Alito is claiming of this, you know, power of the court to do the, you know, whatever they want to do, and that it's interesting because that's going to play out over a lot of things. I mean, there'll probably be a Supreme Court decision on gun ownership and where you can carry your guns. You know, be able to carry them everywhere, which is not what we want to see happen. What do we want to have? A world where politics are decided, like in the movie The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, where the powers would bring in their, you know, their thugs to come in and kind of intimidate everybody because they're wearing firearms wherever they go. And I'm a firearm owner, but I don't feel it necessary to go packing everywhere I go because society is not that unsafe where you need to be packing wherever you go.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no, and there should be limits on magazine sizes. I mean, I've brought this up before, is that what Bill Ruger actually penned in 1989, apparently in the letter to Congress after a mass shooting, they never intended his firearms to be, for military-type firearms to be used for civilian use. And no honest man needs more than 10 rounds of his magazine.
That's correct. Sure,
I saw that
sure.
Nitwit from Florida. And explain his firearms, and waving around, say, well, this doesn't fit in this one, you know, the 10-round magazine. Well, of course it doesn't fit because it wasn't designed for that particular firearm. Because I pull out a Natchez catalog that I got from a distributor that where they sell magazines, and you can get 10-round magazines for probably each and every of those firearms that he has.
All kinds of things. You know, that, again, make the practical application just very important, right? And to go back to your initial point, Mark, which I could not agree with more, many of these things are not in the Constitution, including Marbury versus Madison, this notion that the Supreme Court is going to tell us what the law is. That's where it started. But again, as we have chatted before, I think your articulation of this general concept, the Constitution's got to be a living document, right? James Madison, George Mason, these people that we revere, I revere, you revere, they would not understand it and be horrified by, frankly, many of the things that we do today, 200 years later, including this radio station, right? The lights in our ceilings, the cars we drive, the very products that we engage on a regular basis. And it's got to be a living constitution. We talk a lot in the civil rights area about penumbras. And at some point down the road, we'll chat about this other case having to do with abortion rights and privacy rights. We'll do that some other Saturday morning. But your point, Mark, is so well taken, which is it's not there. The Supreme Court has got to have the prerogative to be able to expand on and make the Constitution living for today. I want to chat more about that right after this next break. I appreciate very much your comments, Mark. I want to talk more about this next case coming up, but the Supreme Court is going to have another opportunity to tell us what the law is under Marbury versus Madison. Case coming out of New York called Bruin. We'll do that right after the break. So much appreciate the calls already, the comments, and we'll be right after. We'll do more of that right after this break on Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel, WAUK Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. This is Jim Santel, Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel, WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw in Waukesha. Thank you so much for joining us this morning for our inaugural program, talking about in greater depth some of the issues we've chatted about during the course of the week. This morning we're talking about the very somber issue of firearms in America. Don't need to tell any of you about the impact that this issue, this concern has had upon quite literally lives and livelihoods, including here in Wisconsin, throughout the United States of America. Right before the break, we were chatting about what the Second Amendment does and does not mean. One of my frustrations is this complete synonymous understanding that the Supreme Court has said that the Second Amendment basically vests in everybody a right to own a firearm in the home and nothing more. That symmetry forgets the other piece of this, which is that the Supreme Court has also said that there's a right to conditions and limitations on transfer and to ownership and use and even manufacture of guns. And that's one of the reasons why regulations out there, which we'll chat about at the end of this hour, can in fact be imposed. We do have some callers calling in, and we encourage you to stay on the line. In the interest of moving to our next significant topic, I appreciate so much the callers calling in this morning. I'm going to move on to what's going to happen next in the Supreme Court, which is this case out of New York. I teased a little bit before the break. In 1911, believe it or not, in the New York State, the legislature enacted something called the Sullivan Act, and it made the issue of concealed carry permits at the discretion, the judgment call of local law enforcement. And the law states that to obtain a permit, the applicant, the resident, must demonstrate a specific need for self-protection that's distinguishable from that of the general community or of persons engaged in the same profession. That's a lot of lawyer stuff, right? A lot of legislative language there. But that was the law in the state of New York and remains the law to this time. So what happens? Well, again, to truncate this a little bit, over time, plainly, the various government entities in the state of New York follow that and are certifying or not certifying the private use and carry of weapons in the public domain beyond the home in the streets of New York. And eventually, two folks named Robert Nash and Brandon Cook, N-A-S-H and K-O-C-H. They're a part of a group called the New York Rifle and Pistol Association. They apply for a permit under the Sullivan Act, and New York State says, you know what, you can't have it. Nash, for example, sought a permit for handgun after a string of robberies in his neighborhood, but he was denied that right because he couldn't prove a need in the public domain for self-defense. And so as a result of that, Mr. Nash, Mr. Cook, and others, the Rifle and Pistol Association, say, you know what, we think in the wake of Heller, that it should be expanded to ensure that we've got that right beyond just our homes. We're going to go beyond that onto the streets of sidewalks of America. And so they challenge the New York law. And they challenge it on the basis that the judgments entered with respect to their applications were flawed, were not based upon a proper constitutional analysis, and that they, in fact, should have a right under the Constitution, apart from the New York authorization process, to own a firearm and to use it, to carry it, in an open and unadorned setting in the streets of New York and other places. And so that was the issue. Eventually, it comes up to the through the lower courts, and they appeal to the Second Circuit and an appellate court. They affirmed the dismissal of the case by the district court in August of 2020. And along the way, one of the superintendents for the New York State Police, his name is George Beach, he's replaced by a fellow named Corlett, ultimately by a fellow named Kevin Bruin in 2021. And Bruin was subsequently named as the defendant in this lawsuit brought by the New York Rifle and Pistol Association and by Nash and Cock. That's how we get case before the Supreme Court. Nash and Cook looking at all of those rights that they may or may not have, coming up to the Supreme Court. And what does the Supreme Court do? Well, this is the case that is presently in front of the United States Supreme Court. And we know some things. We know some things about what the Supreme Court will likely do. It was argued by representatives of Cook and by Nash and the Pistol Association way back in November of this past year. And the question the Supreme Court decided to review was fairly limited. The question whether the state's denial of the petitioner's applications for concealed carry licenses for self-defense violated the Second Amendment, okay? So the question is whether or not Heller, which we talked about in the first segment, the first portion of our time together this morning, whether that, in fact, should be extended to cases and situations beyond the home into the streets of America. The petitioners, the New York Pistol Association, represented by Paul Clement, who is actually from the state of Wisconsin, a former Solicitor General during the George Bush administration, he was arguing on behalf of the National Rifle Association that, in fact, there is a constitutional right to carry beyond the home, opposed by Barbara Underwood, serving as a Solicitor General for the state of New York, defending the law. And that argument back in November is going to be the subject of our discussion right after this next break. We're going to tell you about what the justices said, gives us a very good sense of what they probably will be doing very shortly, probably in the next weeks, in the month of June, maybe into July and beyond. For the first time, again, in 14 years, telling us what the Second Amendment means, coming up right after the break here on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM. And we're back once again. This is Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. I'm your host, Jim Santel. I'm joined here in the studio in downtown Waukesha with my producer, a wonderful young man named Connor. We are here this morning to talk about a very somber issue in America, and that is guns. And specifically, what are the legal underpinnings for understandings about what the Second Amendment does and does not mean? Up to now this morning, we've chatted about the language of the Second Amendment a bit. Talked about this case named Heller, decided by a majority Supreme Court 14 years ago this month, authored by Justice Scalia, saying that, yes, indeed, you've got a constitutional right to possess a weapon in your home for defensive purposes, but also very significantly, from the pen of Justice Scalia, telling us that you have got also a right, I would offer, for your elected officials, your appointed officials, to impose those reasonable, rational restrictions, limitations on manufacturing, sale, transfer, ownership, use, that keep us all safe and secure. The basis for much of the legislation proposed in states and that the federal government, not all of it, as we know well, adopted and passed by our legislative bodies and our elected representatives. So right before the break, we were beginning to get into this New York case that is going to be decided sometime in the next, I would say, 4 to 5, 6 weeks or so. It's called Bruin. Bruin, the official name is New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin. Supreme Court has before it the issue now of whether or not the decision in Heller should be expanded to acknowledge, to embrace the notion that the government cannot in any way, including authorizations, including applications for concealed carry, restrict in any way your right under the Constitution to use and carry a weapon outside of the home. That's basically the focus of this Bruin case. We know some things about what the Supreme Court will probably do, and I'm going to make some predictions here about that in just a moment or so, but we know those things because this case was, as I indicated right before the break, argued before the Supreme Court way back in November, November 3rd. And at that time, as I said, Paul Clement, former Solicitor General in the U.S. Department of Justice, representing the National Rifle, the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Barbara Underwood, who was representing the New York State, also served as an acting Solicitor General of the U.S. between the Clinton and Bush administrations, both of them with great government experience, lots of time spent arguing cases before the Supreme Court. They were arguing this case, this very issue, before the United States Supreme Court in November. And again, very soon, the justices to issue a decision on this, first time in 14 years, telling us what the Supreme Court believes and what the law is when it comes to the Second Amendment. So what do we know from that argument? Well, Chief Justice John Roberts played a major role. John Roberts is very skeptical of the legitimacy of this New York law that imposes upon the petitioners here this obligation to get authorization by the government to carry a handgun in public. Roberts basically said the Second Amendment protects a constitutional right just as the First Amendment does. People seeking to exercise either of those rights, he said during the course of the oral argument in November, should not have to demonstrate to the government that they have a good reason or special need to do so. That's our Chief Justice. And so he went on to say, you don't have to say when you're looking for a permit to speak on a street corner or whatever that, you know, your speech is particularly important. So why, he goes on to say, do you have to show in this case, convince somebody, again, this is his exact quote, that you're entitled to exercise your Second Amendment right by virtue of submitting an application and getting permission. So plainly, John Roberts is very skeptical of this New York law, as are a majority of the members of the Supreme Court. This, as in other cases, pretty much breaking down so-called partisan or political lines, likely that there will be at least six justices finding that this New York law is unconstitutional. But before we get there, also note that like Heller, the Chief Justice, as did others, and we'll chat about that in just a moment or so, the Chief Justice was also among those who said that guns could be barred at certain places that might be especially sensitive or need to be secure. And so he identified, for example, subways or public protests. He was talking about Yankee Stadium, Times Square in New York, obviously New York venues, college campuses in New York City, basically suggesting that even though there may in fact be a constitutional right to carry a weapon outside of your own home, that right probably should be restricted, conditioned, as Scalia would say, on where you are. And so a lot of exchange between the justices and between the attorneys arguing this case. At one point, Mr. Clement, arguing on behalf of the petitioners and New York State Rifle Association, said carrying a firearm outside the home is a fundamental constitutional right, one that's allowed and with few restrictions in many states. He said those states included major cities like Phoenix, Houston, and Chicago. And Justice Elena Kagan, obviously on the opposite side, if you will, of the Supreme Court bench when it comes to Chief Justice Roberts, says that most people think that Chicago is like the world's worst city with respect to gun violence. And so makes that point. We'll get back to cities down the road. Brett Kavanaugh, to go back to the other side, said the court should limit its ruling to what he called their permitting regime. In other words, focusing just upon this authorization piece. We don't have to answer all the sensitive places questions in this case, some of which will be challenging, no doubt. But once again, what does that mean? That means that Kavanaugh likewise recognizes that there must be some limitations on this public right to carry a weapon beyond your home, and that the Supreme Court will probably articulate a view that there do need to be some restrictions based upon sensitive places like schools and like public places where the public convenes, subways, places of transportation, and that maybe the sensitive areas, while they can't be defined, are very important. They will be the subjects of future litigation about what is and is not sensitive. In other areas, Justice Roberts said, it's the purpose of the Second Amendment to allow people to protect themselves. That's implicated when you're in a high crime area. It's not implicated when you're out in the woods. Again, drawing this distinction between various places where this extended view of the Supreme Court might in fact apply. Justice Alito, who has been much in the news in connection with the leak of the case involving abortion rights and privacy rights, we'll talk about that in a future time, asked whether people who work late in Manhattan, he said this, it might be that somebody who cleans offices, it might be a doorman at an apartment, it might be a nurse or an orderly, it might be somebody who washes dishes, would be granted a license if they said that they had a dangerous commute through a high crime area. And Justice Alito went on to say again during the oral argument of November, they do not get licenses. Is that right? And Ms. Underwood, representing the state of New York, said that's generally correct. The core right to self-defense, she said, does not allow for all people to be armed for all possible confrontations in all places. And significantly, inside this large discussion among the Supreme Court about what the Supreme Court will view, the Second Amendment says, this notion of limitations as well. There was repeated reference to something called the Statute of Northampton of 1328. When I'm here on a regular basis in the week, I know that Dom and Mike routinely invoke the Statute of Northampton in 1328. It did, in fact, forbid, carrying firearms of any kind, again, a very different time and place in the 14th century, to fairs and markets. And it's often cited by some proponents of gun regulation as evidence that the founders, James Madison, George Mason, the Second Amendment, the people who presumably wrote the Second Amendment and understood what they meant by it, did not intend the Second Amendment to preclude limits on public carrying of firearms, but nonetheless that there should be limitations on the places where you can, in fact, do that. Clement went on to say that the statute was not to be understood as a general prohibition on carrying outside the home, but was a prohibition on carrying unusual and dangerous weapons or using weapons in a way that terrorized the public. So lots of discussion back and forth. Justice Breyer weighs in, as did Justice Kagan, on the same issue. And along the way, the important language from Heller was invoked. That is, nothing in their opinion should be taken to cast doubt on longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms. All those are the things that Antonin Scalia said way back in 2008. Finally, an interesting exchange between the Chief Justice and Mr. Clement and others about whether or not the states could say that you're not allowed to carry a weapon on a university campus. And Mr. Clement said, I think the answer to your question is yes. Justice Kagan seemed to think that that was an important concession. She said, you know, anybody can walk around the NYU campus, referring to New York University's many buildings in and around Greenwich Village, those who have been there. Mr. Clement responded to laughter. NYU doesn't have much of a campus, to which Justice Kagan and Justice Breyer disagreed. To my mind, they said, to more laughter, I think NYU does have a campus. So a little bit of levity, even inside this very important discussion among the Supreme Court about what is coming up next. And again, the question about whether or not Heller should be expanded in this case called Bruin beyond what the law says as we get together here on June 4th of 2022. We've got another caller on the line. Let's take that call. Dick from Madison calling in. Delighted to have you calling in, Dick. What's your comment or question this morning about this all-important issue of the law, the constitutionality, and guns in America?
Well, I had a different question. It was about William Barr and Merrick Garland. If it's all right.
All right, sure. Go ahead.
The case that was thrown out this week, or the man that was acquitted, the former attorney for the Clinton campaign.
Mr. Sussman.
William Barr was the person who put Durham on that, correct?
That's correct, right.
Now, in your mind, in mine, don't you think Merrick Garland now should just squash that permanently? I mean, from what I see, William Barr is been excellent at one thing, gumming up the works and changing the story around so that, you know, we're not on what we're supposed to be on.
In other words,
the January 6th.
And undeniably, you've got your facts just right, Dick. There was no doubt that William Barr appointed U.S. Attorney Durham to review this question of whether or not the FBI and others had engaged in this entire investigation that resulted in the Mueller report, obviously. But Bob Mueller is authoring this very expansive report on whether there was Russian collusion with the Trump campaign, whether there was obstruction of justice, but focusing especially on any connections between the Trump campaign and, in fact, the the election and Russia in particular. This past week, again, Mr. Sussman, who is a product of the Durham investigation, acquitted for purportedly lying to the FBI about who he was representing. I do share your view, Dick, that now it has come time. Even though there are a couple of more prosecutions out there, this investigation has been going on for a significant period of time. I would agree with you that it is now time for our present Attorney General, Merrick Garland, to bring that to a conclusion and to basically announce what we've all indicated, which is that there was that there plainly was some relationship between the campaign and Russia. That's in the Mueller report, not a finding of conspiracy, but nonetheless a finding of some obstruction of justice when it comes to the investigation itself. So appreciate the call very much, Dick. We've got a number of other callers on the line. Let's take those right away. Let's go to William Zimmerman. William, you're on the line. What's your question or comment this morning? Good to have you with us. And William, we'll take your call when you're ready to talk with us this morning. William, are you there? Yes?
Yeah, I'm there.
All right.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. Go right ahead. Glad to have you with us.
Okay, here goes. Glad to be here. Let's protect children, not guns. Going into the midterms, we have to make a stand. Are you going to protect the children or are you going to protect the guns? You can't do both. I'm a gun owner. I really believe this has just gone off. The wheels have come off the bus. We pass out guns like candy, no accountability. There's nothing wrong with owning a gun if you're properly trained, licensed, and insured. But anything after that, it's the Wild West. My dad predicted it before he passed away that this would happen, and we do have the Wild West in our country right now, and we've got to stop it. So go ahead.
And no, I was just going to say, William, the reality is that polling shows that I think most Americans agree with you, that again, to make this about the law once again, and is, as Scalia said, Heller says, probably the Supreme Court's going to say as well in this Bruin case, you can impose limitations on the right, and those conditions should be for things like transfer and sale and possession, and also the places where you use it, including, to your very first point, schools, right? Those have got to be secure places where guns can, in fact, be prohibited. And the notion of going in the opposite direction, you can't have an unconditioned right to carry weapons in all places. I agree with you entirely. So thanks so much for the call, William. We appreciate that very much. Right before the break, let's take also a call from Joelle. Joelle, glad to have you with us this morning. What's your thought or question? Delighted to have you with us. And go right ahead, Joelle.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Actually, this is CJ. But your party wants to take away rights for law-abiding citizens, and it's only okay for William's grandson to own the gun he wants, but he wants to restrict everybody else's grandson. Your party, part of the problem is that your party, your Democrat Party, and DAs all across the country have been proven weak on crime. But now you want to restrict law-abiding citizens, and like the criminals are going to turn in all their guns now, and the city of Chicago is going to be safe. Let's see how safe it is this weekend.
Well, and let's talk about law and the imposition of law enforcement and things to keep us all safe and secure. You know, DAs and U.S. attorneys and others in law enforcement, I'd like to think without partisan bias, they enforce the law that's out there. They make certain that the law, understood by the Constitution, by the Supreme Court, is enforced. And you know what? The law does not say that any party, and I bristle somewhat at the notion that some of this is animated by partisan politics. Law enforcement, as I said at the outset, should be apolitical and should be nonpartisan. Republicans and Democrats should be concerned about ensuring safety and security and following the law. And as we're discussing this morning, the Supreme Court has said that there is a right of gun ownership in America, probably going to be reaffirmed in this Bruin case, but you can also impose limitations on it. And my point right before our conversation here, CJ, this morning was and is that all that comes with reasonable restrictions. And they're not unconstitutional. They're the things that keep us safe, even acknowledging that under the Second Amendment and Heller, there is this right. So we appreciate the comment. We appreciate the call very, very much, CJ, and look forward to our future conversations. Right before the break, let's take one more phone call. Charles, you're also on the line. Your thought, your comment this morning as well. And Charles, you're with us. Thanks so much for calling in.
Hi. I just want to say, Jim, I'm glad you have a show now, and I hope this is the start of something more, that you have a full-time show during the week also. I've enjoyed listening to you when you've filled in or been a guest.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that comment, Charles.
Yeah, and you have a very thoughtful point of view. With this gun thing now, it's turning out to be so difficult, and people's rights and stuff like that, and I think there's got to be some common ground and some common thought of what is too far. You know, is having a rifle, you know, if an 18-year-old can buy it, it seems like maybe it should be a 21 for them, you know, for the younger people. I don't know what the cure is, honestly. It's a difficult question.
Sure.
Obviously, mental health is a big issue, though, too, and that seems to be neglected since Reagan, I believe.
It is a difficult question, Charles, right? No, I appreciate very much the comment and the calling in this morning. That's exactly the kind of conversation we want to have. And it leads most appropriately, Charles, to a discussion we're going to have maybe in the last few moments of our time together this morning, both CJ and Charles, others who've called in this morning. What do we do about this? What do we do about these reasonable, rational restrictions that we can, in fact, impose, not only in the wake of Heller, but likely in the wake of Bruin as well? The Supreme Court is not going to say that there is a completely unfettered constitutional right to carry guns in all places. The majority has signaled that in November, and so with a fair bit of reading the tea leaves on this, we can anticipate that while Bruin will, in fact, expand Heller and say that there is a broader right under the Constitution. Here it is, again, many years later, after Heller. Nonetheless, they're going to do exactly what Scalia said initially. They're going to impose some regulations and some restrictions on that with respect to places. And we're going to spend a lot of time, I suspect, as Americans, after this next case is issued, deciding what those specific kinds of places are and what they aren't. But along the way, that we know the kinds of things that can, in fact, be imposed, those things that can, in fact, address those issues. And Charles, as you indicated, we know what those are. And we think that with some clarity from the Supreme Court, that they can, in fact, be legislated. We talked about things like extreme risk protection orders that enable you to go to a judge and say, you know what, Jim Santel might be a threat to himself or to others. And for that reason, temporarily, for his safety, the safety of the community, we should make some restrictions on that. In addition, there are things like, you know, barring semi-automatic weapons. We did that for about 10 years in the past, limiting actually the kinds of weapons that you can, in fact, do under the Constitution based upon what Heller and probably the Bruin case will also reaffirm. Restrictions on age to purchase weapons, universal background checks, the kinds of things that are necessarily imposed constitutionally under Heller. If you go into a gun shop, getting that background check, closing up the gun show loophole, and also a whole variety of safety issues related to home use and home access to guns. All those kinds of things can be legislative. Those are the kinds of things that legislators in Madison, other places around the country, in the United States, Congress are talking about right now. There is this bipartisan group looking at the kinds of things that might, in fact, be regulated, be conditioned constitutionally, as Heller said, and I would offer, again, by way of the future, also indicating that under this Bruin case coming out fairly soon, will also be properly legislated to ensure that the Second Amendment right to gun ownership and perhaps even to carry in public is also conditioned in a way that keeps us safe and secure. All sorts of legislative possibilities out there. We're going into our final minutes here, but before we do so, let's take another caller. That's Larry. Larry, you're on the line. Your thoughts as well this morning. Larry, I think we've got you on the line here. Okay, maybe no longer. All right. So Larry was going to chat with us, but has taken off. Let me talk more about, as we go into our final moments here, about what this means generally and some lessons from the overall discussion this morning. Again, very much appreciate the conversations with those of you who've called in, and we'll look forward to more of that in our future shows. The discussion is all important, and that's what certainly this talk radio program and all the talk radio programs on all sides of the political aisle should be all about. People addressing sometimes differing opinions, but doing it in a way that finds this balance. And that's where I'd like to begin to conclude today. The balance that the Supreme Court is trying to articulate here is recognizing, whether you agree with it or not, whether you agree with Scalia or not, that the legacy, if you will, of Heller is that you've got some constitutional rights of an individual nature to own and use firearms in the home and now probably beyond the home, as Bruin has decided. That right is also conditioned. And it's in the midst of that great middle that is out there that Americans should, in fact, be able to find some agreement when it comes to things, as I just mentioned, like these ERPOs, like barring certain kinds of highly volatile weapons of the sort that I saw only in Iraq, and now we see them in America routinely. Background checks, home safety capacities, other things that educate us all. That's the balance we need to provide when it comes to this very volatile issue. I'd like to think that even in America, as divided as we are today in 2022, we should be able to find that place where all of us can come together to keep us safe and secure, to address the kinds of things we continue to be victimized about in recent weeks, nonetheless acknowledging our constitutional rights as they have been established and understood today by the United States Supreme Court. It has been my great pleasure to spend the morning with you. We'll be back again next week. More Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Connor back in the studio with me. Thank you so much for joining me in this inaugural program. A weekend review of some of these important stories this morning. Guns. Next week, probably talking more about what the big story of next week is, which is the January 6th Commission and its important hearings publicly viewed next week. A pleasure. This is WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, the Shaw and Waukesha. Have a good and safe and healthy week, everybody. And we'll be with you again next Saturday morning. Good morning. Take care.